Alcohol addiction is not just a personal struggle. Its impact echoes through individuals and society at large. Worldwide, 3 million deaths every year result from harmful use of alcohol, representing 5.3% of all deaths. But while it's an important social lubricant that plays an important part in every culture, excessive alcoholism is becoming a growing problem. I'm Christy I, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we'll delve into the hidden costs of alcoholism, shedding a light on the staggering toll it takes on communities. Alcoholism affects millions of people all over the world and is not only harmful to the individual, but also to other people around them, such as family members, friends, and coworkers. On top of that, the health costs are substantial, from liver diseases to cardiovascular issues and mental health disorder. The medical costs can quickly rack up, not just in treatment, but in the long-term care required for individuals dealing with alcohol-related issues. And of the 100,530 liver disease deaths in 2021, 47% of them involved alcohol abuse. Excessive alcohol consumption can also cause death and disability relatively early in life and is a causal factor in more than 200 diseases and injury conditions. Now, beyond health consequences, the harmful use of alcohol brings significant social and economic losses to individuals and society. One of the most alarming consequences is the connection between alcoholism and homelessness. Studies reveal that 38% of homelessness can be attributed to alcohol abuse. Approximately 25 to 30% of the homeless population grapples with alcohol-related issues, and this not only contributes to the strain on shelters and social services, but also perpetuates a cycle of despair that is challenging to break. In total, alcoholism cost the U.S. economy over $249 billion in losses. $28 billion comes from healthcare costs, $179 billion comes from lost productivity, and $13 billion comes in collisions and DUIs, and $25 billion in criminal activity. In 2022, 29.5 million people aged 12 and older had alcohol use disorder. Alcohol-related incidents also place a heavy burden on law enforcement. Alcohol is often a common denominator in various criminal activities, from domestic violence to public disturbances. It not only puts a strain on resources, but also contributes to the cycle of recidivism, which is the tendency of convicted criminals to reoffend. Each year, more than 140,000 deaths are attributed to excessive alcohol use. And now joining us today is Dr. Charles Smith, Medical Director at Recovery First Treatment Centers. Now, Doctor, how does alcohol addiction affect one's relationships with friends and family?
Well, alcohol use disorder or problems with alcohol is very dramatic with interpersonal relationships. Working in the front line of addiction at several rehabs that I work at, patients come in totally overwhelmed with problems that they've developed with marriages, problems they've developed with their children, workplace problems. It basically interferes with every aspect of your life, but I would have to say the relationship aspect is the most influenced. You're basically not yourself when you drink alcohol. There's changes in the brain, changes in the prefrontal cortex, changes with impulse control. It just makes functioning in a healthy relationship extremely difficult.
How much of alcoholism is genetics, and how much of it is personal choice and poor decision making?
Well, I always tell patients in science, quite often we're asked to say nature versus nurture. But when it comes to alcohol problems, we don't really have to make that decision. We know there's a high incidence of genetic involvement with a family member, first or second order relative, having problems with alcohol, then each first or second order relative has a 50% chance of developing that problem. Also, we know it's a product of nurture, your environment growing up, such things like childhood trauma, such things as dual diagnosis, some things as early access to alcohol and drinking alcohol when you're very young. So I always give it about a 50-50. It's a product of your environment, certainly, and it also is a product of your genetics. As far as willpower, for those who have a predisposition for this disease, I don't think willpower is much involved, because your ability to make decisions becomes so impaired. Taking that next drink or having that next drinking event is what's impaired, and that's one of the first bad decisions that people make. So it's the bottom line answer to your question is both. It is a product of bad decisions. I wouldn't say willpower, though. And certainly there's a genetic predisposition and also how we reacted to our environment. Stress of the environment, as I said, dual diagnosis, psychiatric conditions, age of early drinking, and trauma.
Now, from a healthcare standpoint, what are the direct health costs associated with alcohol addiction?
Well, the last article that I reviewed came from the CDC, and this was published in 2019. And I think these numbers, at least for me anecdotally, have went up since then, because after the pandemic, we did see a rise in drinking during the pandemic and after. But it's some pretty staggering numbers. The estimated loss in the United States is $249 billion annually. In general, the American Society of Addiction Medicine now gives the cost of addiction overall as $600 billion in the United States. So it certainly makes sense to me that alcohol alone is almost responsible for half of that cost.
Can you discuss any long-term health consequences and the associated financial burden on both individuals and society?
Well, certainly, I discuss this with my patients all the time. We are now certainly training primary care physicians, internal medicine doctors, family practice doctors to do alcohol screening. For example, we don't want them to fall out of the guidelines that are National Institute of Health, which is that women shouldn't drink over one drink a day or more than seven in a week to be considered high risk, and men shouldn't have over two drinks a day or more than 14 in a week to be considered high risk. Alcohol, being fat soluble, permeates every cell of the body, everywhere from brain cells to heart cells to liver cells to bone cells. We know these patients certainly develop liver disease, with fatty liver disease that certainly at least 10% will progress to fatal cirrhosis of the liver. It is one of the leading causes for dementia in middle-aged to elderly patients who have consumed considerable amounts of alcohol in their life. Also, heart disease and cancer are also associated with heavy to moderate alcohol use. What I tell patients now, if they're interested in a healthy lifestyle, there's simply no redeeming qualities to drinking alcohol. And one of the things I'll say, look, when you went for your routine health maintenance screening, has the doctor ever said, I think you should start drinking alcohol? Of course not. So that's really the way I pose it these days, is there's no redeeming qualities to alcohol. If you have those significant risk factors that I talked about before, or you have fallen out of the recommended guidelines for consuming alcohol, you need to seek help.
And now, can you discuss any studies that quantify the economic burden of alcoholism, including lost productivity and increased healthcare costs?
Yes, this is a 2019 cdc.gov/alcohol article that I just quoted you those numbers before. And it goes into detail explaining, breaking down the healthcare costs, breaking down the workplace productivity, and also the cost of the criminal justice system and automobile accidents. Also in workplace productivity, there's such things as lost work, there's such things as accidents at work. It goes into breaking them down in a little more detail, but that was the gist of it, was a staggering number of $249 billion. And this is a CDC study from 2019.
Are there specific industries or sectors that bear a disproportionate economic burden?
Actually, not that I'm aware of. I think certainly industry and the transportation industry in particular are very susceptible to this, but I will give the transportation industry and the healthcare industry a nod there if they do a better job of monitoring. We quite often use the word when someone comes to treatment if they're in a safety sensitive position. For example, bus driver, train driver, a healthcare professional, nurse, doctor, et cetera. They are certainly monitored by their licensing agency. The unmonitored people, factory workers, farm workers, et cetera, don't get much attention and certainly don't get exposed to screening.
Thank you so much, Dr. Smith, but please stick around. Dr. Charles Smith will stay with us right here after the break. And when we come back, did you know that the per capita alcohol consumption in the country doesn't necessarily correlate directly with the prevalence of alcoholism? We'll have more after the break. While you might think that the rates of alcoholism would correlate closely to the overall alcohol consumption per country, that's actually not the case. Americans on average consume 8.7 liters of pure alcohol per capita annually, but it is only 38th on the list of countries with the highest alcohol consumption per capita. Despite this, it is number 7 on the list of countries with the highest rates of alcoholism. Now, Hungary tops the list as 21% of the population that suffer from alcohol abuse, followed by Russia at 20.9%, Belarus at 18.8%, Latvia at 15.5%, and then the US at 13.9%. Alcohol misuse is now the third leading cause of preventable death in the US after tobacco use and being overweight. Alcoholism can be caused by a combination of genetics, environmental, and physiological factors. Stressful life events, mental health disorders, peer pressure, early access, and the normalization of heavy drinking can all contribute to its development. Drinking often causes you to experience positive outcomes such as feelings of being confident, relaxed, unstressed, and numb, which means that you want to drink alcohol over and over again to feel the same effects. Over time, repeated drinking creates a physical tolerance to alcohol, and you'll end up experiencing withdrawal symptoms when you stop drinking. And this can quickly turn into a vicious cycle. For those who are willing to get help, there are many choices, including Alcoholics Anonymous, residential rehab, outpatient counseling, etc. Now, rehabilitation centers play a crucial role in offering support, therapy, and a structured environment for recovery. However, there are challenges such as stigma, accessibility, and relapse prevention that persist. These centers can cost from a few thousand dollars for outpatient programs to tens of thousands for inpatient facilities. Factors include the duration of treatment, amenities provided, and the level of medical and therapeutic support. There are also medications used in conjunction with counseling and therapy that can help to rebalance chemicals in the brain that may be changed by drinking too much and decreasing the craving for alcohol. Other medications work by causing unpleasant effects such as nausea, vomiting, headache, or flushing if you drink alcohol in order to create a negative association. So for this and more, let's bring in again Dr. Charles Smith, Medical Director at Recovery First Treatment Centers. Now, Doctor, how can communities implement preventative measures to reduce the societal costs of alcohol addiction?
Well, certainly a mindset that alcohol is not considered acceptable for many situations needs to be taken. For example, if there's going to be minors at an event, and how much and what sorts of alcohol would be served there. With professional sports, we've noticed that they started closing down the alcohol vendors an hour or possibly 45 minutes before the end of the game. So basically it is to put some curtailing events around alcohol. Don't make the ease of access quite so great. Certainly monitor for under 21 so that it's not accessible to them. It's an overall awareness that I believe should start with the primary care physician, that the primary care physician asks each visit, well, do you drink? How much do you drink? How often do you drink? Do you exceed guidelines? And do you need some sort of medical intervention or referral? And I'm seeing that done now, even when I go to my own private physician. I notice that I get those questions asked more often than we did 20 years ago.
And what roles do rehabilitation programs play in mitigating the long-term consequences of alcoholism? And how effective are these rehab programs?
Well, rehabilitation programs are very effective when combined with patient compliance. I tell my patients this all the time. For their best success, I need them to approach this just as they would heart disease, just as they would high blood pressure, just as they would diabetes. I need them to adhere to a treatment plan. It is a chronic, long-term relapsing disease, so this will be a treatment that I expect them to participate in the rest of their life. As far as coping skills, relapse prevention, healthy boundaries, better decision-making, it's a process that the therapists work with patients all the time on.
Now, in what ways does alcohol addiction contribute to mental health disorders, and how do these conditions complicate the recovery process? Can you discuss the correlation between alcoholism and issues such as depression, anxiety, or cognitive decline?
Well, first of all, when you're treating mental health issues, anxiety, depression, mood disorder, schizophrenia, any of our spectrum of psychiatric illnesses, adding alcohol to the mix is a real burden and a real complicator, because we're working on the dopamine reward system when we're trying to treat these patients for depression, either with serotonin, with norepinephrine inhibitors, with dopamine stabilizers, and alcohol interferes with those. It also interferes with our medications that we use, our antidepressants, our anti-anxiety agents, our sleep medications are all interfered with by alcohol. So it really complicates the field, makes it much, much more difficult to treat a depression patient, an anxiety patient, a mood patient, when alcohol is involved, for all those reasons. As I said, that interferes with the dopamine reward system. It also interferes with any medical interventions that we would be posing. It also causes complications in the personal life that we talked about earlier, relationship problems, et cetera, possibly even involvement in the criminal justice system. One of the first things with depression or anxiety or any mental health patient when we see them, we certainly want to know what substances they use, see if they fall out of the range, and do an intervention to see if they need rehab.
And how much does alcohol addiction contribute to criminal behavior, and what kind of a strain does it put on the criminal justice system?
Well, it puts an extreme on both the criminal justice system and the healthcare system. There's many studies that show over 50% of emergency room encounters have alcohol or drug involvement. There's also a large correlation between domestic violence and alcohol use. And simply because alcohol interferes with our impulse control and our decision-making, it's heavily involved in crime. There's many crimes that wouldn't be committed if the individual wasn't under the influence of alcohol.
And how does alcohol addiction impact employment rates and job stability at both an individual and societal level?
Well, I thought that was interesting that workplace productivity was our highest cost here at $179 billion. So that's basically over two-thirds of the cost of excessive alcohol use is directly on industry and workplace productivity. So we have patients who may not be intoxicated at the time they come to work, but they had drank excessively the day before, so their productivity is down. I know certainly we don't want healthcare professionals or safety-sensitive position patients to come to work either impaired or recovering from the effects of alcohol. It's a very big factor in industry. And as I said, this cost of $249 billion was even eye-opening to me. I knew the overall cost of addiction, but the alcohol component alone, I think, is very high. It's almost half.
How has the prevalence of alcoholism changed over the years? And are there more notable trends or patterns in different demographics?
Well, I'm certainly starting to see with Generation X, even, for example, alcohol-free drinks. We start seeing things like mocktails. I know Heineken now has alcohol-free beer, and I'm sure there's many others out there. I just saw that in Los Angeles an alcohol-free bar opened up. So I think the trend's heading there, just as it has for many other health concerns over the years. Education is our way out of this. People, and young people particularly, just need to be taught the facts. Certainly they're very smart, and they can make good decisions when posed with the facts. And the facts are alcohol is not good for humans to consume, even in small amounts. There's no redeeming qualities. If you have the risk factors, it's even worse.
Thank you so much, Dr. Smith, for all your time today. Now, the question of whether alcohol addiction is a disease or personal choice is a topic that has been widely debated. Many medical professionals and organizations recognize alcohol addiction as a disease, as it emphasizes the physiological and neurological changes that occur in the brain as a result of repeated substance abuse. Studies show that the prolonged abuse of alcohol can lead to alterations in the brain structure and functions, which affect the decision-making impulse control and reward pathways. However, some argue that alcohol addiction is a result of a series of personal choices. Those subscribing to the personal choice model may view addiction through a moral or ethical lens, attributing it to a lack of willpower or moral character. Ultimately, there's a widespread agreement on the importance of providing support and effective treatment using a combination of medical, psychological, and social interventions. I'm Christy Yai. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.